Hi, I'm Erwin McManus, and this is the Mosaic Podcast. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And if you're one of our regular listeners, we love the fact that you journey with us, and we pray that every single message inspires you and helps you become the person that God created you to be. Every single week, we send a new message across the world, and everything we do here at Mosaic is made available to everyone in the world for absolutely free. The reason we can do that is that we have incredible people who give generously and sacrificially to make this possible. And I want to invite you to join us. If you're already a giver, thank you so much. If this is something you've not yet done, I want to invite you to start doing that now. Go to mosaic.org/give and give a one-time gift, or even beyond that, become a recurring giver here at Mosaic. And if you're one of those individuals who God has blessed in an amazing way financially, I want to invite you to become one of our partners here at Mosaic. What's really beautiful about Mosaic is that our biggest givers are families who do not live here in Los Angeles, but they are so committed to the message of Jesus going to the world that they support the work here from Los Angeles to the ends of the earth. And so I want to invite you again, go to mosaic.org/give, become a part of our support system, become one of our partners, and more than anything else, I want you to listen to the message, allow Jesus to speak to you in a way that will change your life. So even though we're celebrating a beginning in 1993, that was before many of you were born, and we're celebrating the 30 years that brought us to this moment in 2023, today, our focus is going to be on 2053. Because we're not closing a chapter, we're opening a chapter. But I want us to take a moment and celebrate where we've been. Some of you are new to the story called Mosaic. For some of you, this may be your very first time. Some of you have been here for decades. You've been about so much over the years. So many locations, so many experiences, so many iterations of what Mosaic has been. And we need to all remember that no matter how big our story is, we're always a part of a bigger story. And we're always a part of someone else's story. All of our stories weave together to create something beautiful. And Kim and I are so grateful that our lives cannot be explained without you. But I want us to look back and just celebrate together some of the journey we've been on. Over the last 30 years, the people we have served in person is over 10 million people. We can celebrate that. The decisions to follow Jesus over those 30 years are more than 500,000 people. 500,000 people. The number of people that our community touches around the world online is more than 30 million people. And Mosaic MSC, the fire of our worship community, has reached over 500 million people through their music. And I have to tell you, when Austin brought me this slide, I looked at it and he could see that I had a suspicious expression. And he said, "Something wrong?" I said, "Yes, it's these numbers." He goes, "Well, what's wrong?" I said, "They seem too high." He said, "Oh, I thought you thought they were too low because we underestimated rather than overestimated." So these numbers reflect the minimum number of people that have been impacted through your sacrifice, through your life, through the community that we've come to know as Mosaic, and I want to thank you for being a part of that. Can we just celebrate that together? Now, the whole world comes to Mosaic. We've counted 50, 60, 70 different nationalities that are part of our community over the years. But our community also goes to the entire world. So I want you to see some of the places that we've actually physically served across the planet. And I want you to remember, this particular map is up here before we are able to finalize travel to Mars. And so we're going to add another one later, but we've been all the way in New Zealand, Australia, Indonesia, Singapore, Philippines, Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Cambodia, Thailand, all the way over to South America and Argentina, Paraguay, Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Colombia,
in Africa, South Africa, Malawi, Tanzania, Egypt, and the Middle East, of Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Pakistan, Turkey, in Europe. You think, well, that's not a sacrifice. And we served in Italy and Spain and France and Germany, Moldova, Ukraine. And then in some of the obscure places in the world, we've actually served in Columbus, Ohio, Denver, Colorado, Phoenix, Arizona. Those people never returned. But and we, of course, have our campus in Mexico City with pastors Emerson and Christina Nowotny right here. Our campus in Quito, Ecuador with Andres and Anna Gonzalez. And I just love the fact that one of our dots is Cuba, because our community has been willing to go to places that so desperately need hope and meaning and love and compassion. And I just love that Mosaic has touched so many parts of the world. But locally, we've been all over the map as well. Some of you only know us here, but these are some of the places in LA that we've actually had our campuses. Some of you came early. How many of you, I just wonder, came to Mosaic during the Mayan days? The Mayan is a club downtown that has thousands of pagan gods carved in every inch of the space. How many ever went to the Shangri-La or the Soho or Q? It kept changing names because the police kept shutting it down. It was the original club that Prince owned. How many of you came first to the Shangri-La? Any of you? That was a little different. That was a lot of fun. That required double plastic gloves to clean the club. We would find mattresses everywhere, syringes everywhere. The bathrooms would be flooded over, but it was church. We've been to the Rose Room in Venice Beach, and we've gone all the way down to Manhattan Beach, Beverly Hills High School. Yes, Beverly Hills 90210, that's us. That's how we roll. And they've been to the Alex Theater multiple times. We've been to Glendale. See, no one can question our willingness to sacrifice. We went to Glendale because we left William Carey, drove people across the highway to the Alex Theater, then got kicked out of the Alex, went back to William Carey, then went back to the Alex, and then came here to Hollywood. This was before the internet. This is before 1998. This is before there were ways to communicate with each other quickly. I would meet people a year or two later after 10, 15 moves who would tell me, I lost you. We searched for 6 months and could not find Mosaic. I am convinced there are people in therapy to this day. It's so much easier now to know where we're going. Sometimes we went to 5 places at one time. There was a time where I would travel to 4 different locations on Sunday to speak 5 times and travel 200 miles every single Sunday to the different locations across the city. But that was Mosaic. Always on the move, always changing. In fact, one location, I think it might have been the Loft. You had to drive into Los Feliz area. You went over a railroad track. There was a building that said, nude, nude, nude. And we'd say, turn right, and there's Mosaic, Mosaic, Mosaic. And it was great marketing. Everyone knew where it was, but they didn't. It's been a part of our journey. And this is where we've come from, but it's not where we're going. And if today you want to hear where we're going, would you like to know where we're going? Yeah. We're going into the future. But we have no idea what that looks like. And today I want to focus on 2053. I want to talk about the new. The very first passage of scripture I ever opened up when I came to Los Angeles, when we came to Los Angeles 30 years ago. And it's crazy. I was 34 years old and Aaron is now 34 years old. Kim is still 34. And the very first passage I ever opened up to a small group of people about the future we wanted to create was this one in Isaiah 43, verses 18 and 19. It says, forget the former things. Do not dwell in the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? Now, this declaration from God is an incredible promise, but there's always a shadow to every light. See, whenever God says, I'm doing a new thing, what he's letting you know is that he is no longer doing what he was doing. It's hard enough for us to let go of things that God has no role in, no part of. It's hard enough to let go of things that we create, things that we hold on to. But God is saying, I did something in you, I did something with you, I did something for you, and I'm no longer doing that. I think one of the most challenging moments in our lives will be when God speaks into our lives and he says, everything you did was wonderful, it was all great, it was all good, we're on a journey together, but that's not where we're going. So when you hear this phrase, see, I am doing a new thing, it should be both exhilarating and terrifying at the same time. Because when God is doing a new thing, it means that God's about to shake everything up in your life. And everything's going to begin to destabilize. You're going to wonder if anything's going to remain. I didn't understand when I entered into this journey what it was going to cost me. I really didn't understand the whole dynamic of the Christian faith growing up incredibly irreligious. I'd never gone to church, so I had no idea what church was like or what was expected. And I remember when we came here to Los Angeles and this little church in East LA wanted me to become their pastor, and their pastor had been there 25 years, came and said, we think you should become the pastor. And I remember going to Kim, and I said, honey, they think I should become the pastor. What do you think? And Kim looked at me dead in the eyes the way anyone who knows Kim knows how she does. And she said, you should never be a pastor. And I asked her, but what do you really think, honey? And she was very clear. Whatever a pastor should be, that's not what I was. And she was absolutely right. I was completely misfit for this particular role. You see, I don't know why, but God seems to design us all with peculiar uniquenesses. And a part of the way that God designed me was to skew to the new, with almost no reflection or interest in the old. And I didn't realize that Christianity and the church had such a high value for the old. It seems that religions are built around tradition. Religions are built around memories. Religions are built around mementos and memorials. I don't think it's incidental that in small churches all around the land that there are cemeteries right next to them. I just don't think there is a clear line between the cemetery and the church. And one of the great challenges as we entered into this journey, and I want to bring you into it because some of you have only come into this journey recently. And one of the things that Mariah said to me when I was thinking through what words to share with you, she said, please let them know how much it cost you to do this. See, one of the challenges with the new is that the new exists in the unknown. In fact, the new only exists in the unknown. It doesn't exist in the known. See, when it's known, it's the old. It may be an incredible old, it may be an awesome old, it may be a wonderful old, but if it's known, it's the old. And so if you want to move into the new, you're going to move into the unknown, you're going to move into mystery, you're going to move into uncertainty, you're going to move into chaos, you're going to move into unpredictability. It's the new that demands faith. It's the new that demands courage. It's the new that demands bravery. Because the new is in that chaotic space where you have no idea what it's going to look like or how it's going to play out or how it's going to come together. Kim and I, we were at such an interesting time in our life when we moved here to LA. We were living in Dallas. And we had a daughter named Patty who had just finished high school, was about to go to college. And Aaron was 3 years old and Mariah was 30 days old. Can you imagine moving across the country when your daughter is 30 days old? I mean, I had just barely recovered from Kim's pregnancy. And I mean, I was still feeling the effects of her labor. And I don't know how 30 days later she could just get up and leave everything and move across the country. And we were not moving here for a job. We were not moving here for anything that was secure. We were not moving for anything that was promised. We were moving here for a dream, for an idea, for an ideal. And part of it was in my 20s when I became a follower of Jesus, I started studying history. And I had this fascination with global movements and trends. And I ended up putting 5 clocks on my wall. New York, London, Paris, the Rhine region of Germany, Shanghai, Tokyo, Yokohama, and Buenos Aires. Because those were the first 7 cities that broke 5 million people in population. And I had them on my wall to remind me that the world does not move into the future at the same time. That even though we all exist in a time that's marked by 2023, we're not all living in the same time in history. So you can travel to places in the Middle East and you can go back 1,000 years in time. You can travel to Pakistan or to Afghanistan and feels if you've gone back 500 years in the past. You can go to Shibuya Station in Tokyo and feels if you've gone 50 years into the future. You can go to Iowa and realize you're 150 years in the past, or go to New York and wonder exactly, where am I? Because the world does not move into the future at the same time. And when we were 24 years old, we were simply dating. I remember telling Kim, this little farm girl from the mountains of North Carolina, from a little town outside of Asheville called Leicester, that's actually spelled Leicester, where there's one road. Is it route? There's a route, like Route 3 or Route 7. There's like one road that goes through Newfound, and she grew up on a farm where water actually comes out of the ground, and they grow tobacco. And this little farm girl, I'm saying, we're going to move to Los Angeles if we get married. And the reason I wanted to move to L.A. is not because I love smog. It's not because I love traffic. It's not because I think L.A. is the most elegantly designed city in the world. You have to love L.A. to love L.A. Because I came to this conclusion that Los Angeles was the capital of the future. That if you wanted to be on the crest of the wave, if you wanted to be where the future was being created and shaped, you had to go to Los Angeles because it was the epicenter of human creativity. It's the epicenter of storytelling. It's the epicenter where we tell each other who we are and who we're becoming. And I wanted to be here because this was the place you could plant your flag. And if you leave a mark, you change the course of human history. But I didn't know what that would look like. And I had no idea how it would play out. And when all of a sudden we added the dynamic of now suddenly becoming the pastor of a little church of a few hundred people, before it was Mosaic, it was really challenging. Because I had to convince people who were very comfortable with tradition, and were very comfortable with security, very comfortable with safety, that we should change the world. And the only way we could change the world is if we changed ourselves. It was crazy. Every little change made somebody mad. If I changed the order of the gathering, people would come to me complaining that I did something wrong. And I remember when I moved the offering to the end, they said, "Why are you moving it to the end?" I said, "Well, because I don't want people to think about money earlier. It just still feels wrong." And I remember it was so rigid and so difficult that I had our team build a little stage like this one. And every Sunday, I would have it moved to a different part of the building. So when people came in, they would have no idea which direction they're going to be facing. This guy's out of his mind. And I was. All those changes didn't really matter. It wasn't that moving it over there, or over there, or over there made it better, more dynamic, or more spiritual. I just wanted them to get used to the fact that life is change. And if we're going to change the world, we have to be willing to embrace change as a core value of who we are as a community. And we had things that mattered to us. We were, I think, singularly the first church in the world that was just one word, Mosaic. I mean, if Prince can do it, so can we. Elvis can do it. Madonna can do it. Sting can do it. In fact, I had a sting moment. I was over at Chateau Marmont having breakfast with Usher. Yeah, that's how I roll. I paid for breakfast. I'm not sure why. And then right when I was leaving, Usher said, come here, come here. And I went over there, and there was a little table, and Sting was sitting there. Now, Rock Singing is one of my favorite songs of all time. I love The Police. I love Sting. I don't know Sting, but I love him. Sting, I love you. And all of a sudden, he said, hello. My name is Sting. And I said, hi. My name is Irwin. And I realized if you do anything significant in your life, you just have one name. That's not why I named it Mosaic. It's just a great story. But 30 years ago, no one took church off their names. You know why? Because churches wanted people to know we're a church because we're here for Christians. And they would even tell you what kind of Christians. If you're a Pentecostal, this is your church. Or if you're Baptist, this is your church. Or if you're Methodist, this is your church. Or if you're Presbyterian, this is your church. And even the cool progressive churches would still call themselves like Calvary Chapel. So if Calvary mattered to you, this is your church. Or call themselves the Vineyard, which no person without God knows that's in the Bible. But every Christian would go, oh, we're the Vineyard. And people say, why don't you have church? I said, because we don't want to tell people without God we're the church. We want people without God to tell us we're the church. And the metaphor was perfect because it's a mosaic of broken and fragmented pieces that are brought together by an artist to create something beautiful, especially when light strikes through it. And this was a time 30 years ago. I know it's hard for you to imagine this, but this was a time where there was racism and injustice, and people thin sliced between their color and ethnicity and hated each other because of how much melatonin they had. And it was worse than black and white. As we began to have this dream of bringing all the nations together, I began to have conflict because we were reaching Japanese and Chinese and Koreans, and they let us know, Koreans and Chinese and Japanese don't do life together. Because you need to know what Japan did to China and what happened to Korea. And so we don't do life together. I'm realizing, oh, it's not just about bringing in Asians. It's realizing the Asians actually don't even like Asians. And Latinos were worse. I'm from El Salvador. I was about to go on a TV show for Telemundo. But because I don't speak Spanish with an accent, they didn't think I could speak Spanish. So there are four people who happen to be Mexican talking about how they hated Salvadorans. We just keep coming. We're like a virus. We take all the jobs. And they just kept going on and on and on. At the end, right before we went on TV, they said, 2 minutes, are you on air? That's when I spoke in Spanish. I let them know in Spanish, hi, my name is Irwin. I'm from El Salvador. It's great to meet all of you. It was a really fun show. But I was sitting in a room where a Bolivian explained that a Mexican wasn't the right person to represent them. And a Mexican explained that Argentine was not a person that they wanted representing then. And I realized that Latin Americans were thin slicing between brown. You think we have black-white issues? We just have issues. And we had a vision of bringing the world together in this mosaic. Look around the room. You're not a dream. You are a reality. But we didn't know what it would look like. I had people who would stop me in the parking lot telling me if one more of that particular ethnic group came into the church, they were leaving. Our conversations would be so brief. I would say, we'll miss you. I had people coming up to me saying, if one more person with an earring in their face, I don't know if you remember, there was a time where that was very, very fashionable. And they just have so many earrings in their faces. If one more person with an earring in their face comes on stage to lead worship, we're out of here. I go, why are you so focused on the earring rather than the heart? And it took us so much. And I want you to know that these are things that no one would think about now. And frankly, Mosaic opened doors to so many people. And And I can tell you that in this intersection in Hollywood, we've always loved every single person who's ever walked into this building. It never mattered whether you're white or black or Latino or Asian. It didn't matter if you're male or female. It didn't matter if you're gay or straight. We have loved every single person who's walked into this building. And we didn't know what it would look like because the new exists in the unknown. And we made so many mistakes. I hired David Arcos, if you know David Arcos, when he was 21 years old. I mean, David is awesome, but he's also a little crazy. And I said, David, just create on Sundays. There were Sundays, he had ropes tied to the ceiling, and people would come in on the ropes to be dramatic. They'd cut films and show them between my talks and have sketches and dramas and dance. And we were not doing it to be cool. We were doing it to open the door to everyone to say, your creativity, your artistry, your uniqueness, your beauty is welcome here. And I gotta tell you how many times I would have to speak right after a film or a sketch that was horrible. I'm like, what am I gonna do? I was having to do like yoga up here, trying to make it seem like that was what was planned. And sometimes they were just really sacrilegious. Like, oh, God, help me. One time on Christmas, it was Christmas. Because Christmas doesn't always fall on a Sunday, so we had this unique opportunity to have this beautiful Christmas day, and they've been working on an animated film. We were doing animation 20 years ago, and they animated a film with Rudolph and Frosty. We probably violated so many trademark issues, and in fact, laws were created because of our creativity, and and in that short film, somewhere in the middle, Rudolph? Frosty had a conflict, a disagreement on creativity and value. And Rudolph peed on Frosty, and Frosty woke up yellow. We have an auditorium full of children watching this. And then Rudolph's retaliation at the end is he took a magnifying glass and started melting Frosty. And I'm sitting there, I'm sweating. I'm hot. I can feel what's happening in this room. Oh my gosh, that was not even the worst one. And I wanted to leave, except I couldn't, because I had to get up there and pretend that somehow that made sense. Sometimes the only transition I had is, I'm so sorry. Whenever you're creating the new, mistakes happen. See, too many churches are too focused on being perfect. Too many churches are too focused on being perfect and getting it all right. And we just created room for creativity and innovation and beauty and wonder, and we messed up so much. I look back and I realize, no wonder I made so many people mad. They had a right to be mad. Because the new is so unexpected, and it's so unknown and so mysterious. And when Kim and I moved here, and she got on a plane with Mariah, 3 days old, and I got in a U-Haul with Aaron, who was 3 years old, and we came without any idea how we were going to survive. No income, no job. And so I found a house in Alhambra that I thought was cute, but Kim let me know it wasn't. And it was this ridiculous amount of money. It was $1,500 a month. Yeah, back then that was just so much. And I brought Kim there, and it was close to the hood, close to kind of nice. And I said, honey, we can live here. It's $1,500 a month. And she said, we can't afford $1,500 a month. I said, I know. We can't afford anything. So if we're going to get kicked out of a place, let's get kicked out of here. And you just don't know how much of who we are was formed by living in the unknown and the uncertainty and the chaos and the mystery. Because the new exists in the unknown, but it also comes at a great price. And I want you to realize this, that it's so easy to talk about wanting to be innovative and wanting to be creative and wanting to be a pioneer and wanting to be a groundbreaker. But you need to know that if you're actually going to do something new, it's going to cost you. And it may cost you more than you ever thought you could pay. It was tough. Before I came here, I spent 10 years with Kim, and we worked with drug cartels, gangbangers, assassins, worked among the poor, worked where there were Uzi machine guns and buildings and cocaine stacked up to the roof, and that was a safer world than trying to change a church. I'd never seen the kind of crisis and conflict that I came to here. And it was hard. It seemed like every time we made a change, it cost us something. Yeah, you ever just get tired? I got tired. For 6 years, I had a twitch in my right eye. It's not there, so you can check. But 6 years, every single day and every night of my life, I had a twitch in my right eye from the stress. And I would say, God, could you take it away? And there it was every day. I'd pray, God, just stop this twitch. Wouldn't go away. I thought, well, maybe it's God's way of reminding me of the cost. So I prayed, God, could you just move the twitch to my butt? That way no one would know but me, and they would just twitch, right? And I would know I'm under stress. There's a huge price to pay. But at least this way I don't look like I'm insane when I'm having a conversation with someone. It's like, heart, we're going into the future. We're doing the right thing. Jesus is with us. Like, and but the level of stress to create a church where everyone could feel that they belonged was hard. To come to this place in Hollywood and try to create a space where people could know how much they matter to God, it was the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. 5 years into it or so, Kim and I were driving on a street, and I just couldn't take it. I had made a public commitment to say 15 years, or I would have tapped out. But I didn't want to break my word. So I was going to hang in there for 15 years. 5 years in, I'm driving down the road, it's real quiet. And I just said to Kim, I can't take this anymore. Just can't do this. She goes, what? And I said, I can't take this. I got to get out of here. And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, I can't lead this place anymore. She goes, what do you mean lead? You haven't led in a long time. She goes, in fact, I don't even know who you are anymore. You used to be a leader. You used to be courageous. You used to be innovative. I don't know who you are now. It made me so angry. I just slammed the brakes on in the middle of the street. Just slammed this car shut. Who are you to tell me I'm not a leader? What do you mean I'm not leading? Because you're not leading. Pull the car over. So I did, because I wasn't leading. And I just did what she told me. And she said, I don't know what happened to you. Somewhere you just gave up. And I realized that's exactly what happened. I had just become the walking dead. Have you ever had a dream or a vision that just haunted you? It just overwhelmed you. It captivated you and captured you and haunted you. And yet you came to a place and you thought, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth my life. I don't know if it's worth this. I don't know if it's worth this pain. I cannot emphasize to you that if Mosaic has ever created a space for you that has made you feel valued and loved, if it's ever created a space where you could bring someone that needed help or encouragement, I want you to know it came with great pain and great sacrifice. To the point of insanity, by the way, where once we did have an internet, there was a group of people, I wish I could say they were something else, but they were Christians, who created a website with slasher films with an hourglass of the Sunday they were going to kill me. And I was out of the country at that time, and one of our staff people saw it, and then they called Kim, and they called the police, and the FBI got involved, and they said it was a legitimate threat. And I had to come home to that. And that was the day, I hope I can share this, where our son basically came and said, I'm out. If this is what Christianity is, and this is what the church is, I don't want to have anything to do with God or anything to do with the church. Because it was hard. Because there was a price to pay. And I want you to know, see, now retroactively, 30 years into this thing, it was worth it. Because you are here. And because the church can become a breath of fresh air, a place of hope for everyone. The curious thing about the new is that it not only exists in the unknown and comes at a price, but it also changes you. You cannot create the new without becoming new. I think this is the dilemma. There's a lot of people want to be a part of the new, but they don't want to be new. If you refuse to change, you will never be a part of the new. You'll just be part of the old. In fact, I saw this meme. I don't know how accurate it is. I'm sure it's sociologically backed up by research, but it says you can know the day a man stopped changing by the style of his clothes. That the moment he stops changing his style of clothes, that's the year he stayed the same. Oh, that's very interesting. I kind of love that. Because I design clothes. See, I'm never going to stop changing. And I can tell you this. This is really what's exciting. I've waited because I committed 15 years, but now I've been here 30. It's a long time. And for probably the last 15 years, I've been going, hey, you got to tell me if I'm irrelevant. Like, you know, people think they know, but they don't know, right? So you got to, like, tell me, hey, Dad, you know, or Pastor, or Irwin, or dude, whatever, you know, you got to say, like, you know, you're not connecting anymore with the world around you. You need to go do something else. And because you never know. But one thing I realize is I meet a lot of 25-year-olds who are so old. I mean, it just breaks my heart. You got old so fast because you're unwilling to risk and to change. You're unwilling to grow. I meet 35-year-olds and 45-year-olds. I'm like, what happened to you? Where did you sell your soul to security and safety? See, what change does is it changes you from the inside out. And this year I turned 65, but I can tell you, I've never been more excited about life in my entire life. I mean, my imagination is going crazy. I can't stop dreaming. Sometimes I can't sleep. I'm just thinking of all the things that would be great, all the things yet to be done, all the things yet to be imagined. And I just feel like, oh, I just hope I get to live long enough to create the next new thing and the next new thing and the next new thing. Because the new changes you. It makes you young. It keeps you alive. It keeps you vibrant. And what it does is the moment you get a taste of the new and you realize the old is the past, the new is the future. That's the only place God is going. It makes you hungry for the new. And all of a sudden you have renewed passion and courage and boldness and bravery. And some of you have got to break free from the old you and step into the new. And it's exciting to me when I see someone like Reggie say, man, this was my life before, but now this is who I am. See, I know so many of you. I see Amanda, who the first day I ever met her was right here, and she says, hi, I'm Amanda, and I'm an atheist. Why do people introduce themselves like that? I don't know, but that is what she said to me. And to see the way she just partners with Kim and is such a passionate follower of Jesus and seeing her life change. And just look around the room and I realize, see, you're the new. See, the future doesn't happen outside of us. It happens within us. And when we become the new, we become the catalyst, the agents. We become God's agency of transformation. And let me tell you, the world desperately needs a new humanity. And that can be you and it can be me. God says, put away the former things, do not dwell in the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Will you even perceive it? What God is actually telling us is, I need to change your perspective. I need to change your mind. I need to change your eyes. I need to change the way you see reality. Or you're going to miss the new. Because the new never grows old. That's the beautiful thing about it, is that the moment the new's been done, it's the old. And you don't want to live in the old. You want to celebrate it. It used to be new, but it's not new anymore. And Mosaic, it's just changed and changed and changed. In fact, sometimes people, when they come here and then they are here for a few years and they leave and they come back, they go, well, Mosaic changed so much. Like, isn't that exciting? That means we're not the old. I remember years ago in a conversation with my brother, Alex, who I love. And I remember he said to me, and he meant it not to be a compliment. He said, wow, you've changed so much. I was a little insulted because I wanted to be more stable than that, more grounded than that. That's why you've changed so much. It took me about a week to process that. I called him back. I said, you're right. I have changed so much. And I'm just getting going. I'm going to change more and more and more. Let me tell you, if someone knew you 10 years ago and you're still the same person, you should just fall on your face and cry. The last thing you want someone to tell you is, I knew you when you were 18. You're just the same at 48. You're not supposed to be the same person at 22 that you are at 32. You're not supposed to be the same person at 32 that you are at 42. You're supposed to keep growing, because the new never grows old. The new is waiting for us. Let's think about Mosaic. We used to have an interior that was all black. Do you remember that? That was before the pandemic. And I only gave our team one suggestion. I want people to walk into the future, not the past. And then when the team began creating, I remember even when Aaron came and said, hey, we want to paint it all white. My first thought was, wow, that's going to be stark. It's going to be cold. It'll be different. And now I have people from all over the world saying, I still remember when I walked into that white building, it was iconic. I'd never seen anything like it. I love when people walk into the church and they walk into the future, not into the past. Because if you connect to Jesus, see, this is the amazing thing. A lot of people think God is a God of the past. That if you give your life to God, you're doing the most conservative thing possible. They lied to you. See, if you trust your life to Jesus, you better hang on tight for the most unexpected adventure you will ever go on. Because see, Jesus isn't afraid of anything. He's not. And here's the thing. He's not afraid of you going through a hard time. He's not afraid of you having some pain. He's not afraid of you dying. I kind of wish he was a little bit more concerned about that, but he's not. See, he's not afraid of anything. You know what if he's driven by any fear, it's your insignificance. That you would not step into your significance and your intention. That you would just drift through life, holding on to the past, thinking that's all there is. But when you enter into a relationship with a God who created you, the new never gets old. It's always anew and always anew and always new. You know what I hope? I hope I can live long enough where you do something, even through the church, that's so unexpected, so brilliant, so astonishing that it surprises me, maybe even shakes me, unnerves me, makes me question, is this okay? I still remember when people walk into the mind and go, is it okay that there are 1,000 pagan gods staring at us? I said, stare back. This is exactly where we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be wherever the 1,000 pagan gods think they're in control. I remember when we went to the club that Prince used to own, and people are like, this feels unethical. It feels wrong. And Aaron and Mariah were so little. I always love this. Every Sunday, our kids never said, Mom, we're going to church. They always said, Mom, we're going to the club. And it would make him so mad. You're going to church. No, Mom, we're going to the club. See, they were going to the club to be church. And the most powerful thing that will ever happen from Mosaic is the next 30 years. And you can be pretty clear that this is not for me, not for Kim, because the next 30 years, that's yours. And then all this, by the way, all this sub-narrative about pastors doing this for their own personal benefit, you can take Kim and my salary for the first 30 years of being pastor, and I never made probably over $25,000 a year. For the first 15 years, I made below welfare. We did not do this for the money. And I don't know if you can tell, but I have skills. I actually could do other things and make boatloads of money. We chose to sacrifice for you because I'm still convinced the church is the epicenter of the new. And And you, when I look at you, you're what brings us hope in the future. The future better watch out. You are a powerful force, an unstoppable force. Not a force of nature, a force of God to do good. Would you just bow your heads with me just for a moment? There's some of you here that have never opened up your life to Jesus. You've leaned toward God, you've been open, but you've never crossed the line of faith. You've been afraid of what you're going to lose and not sure what you would gain. Let me tell you what you're going to lose. Everything. All the old. Let me tell you what you're going to gain. Everything. All the new. God stepped into human history 2,000 years ago in the person of Jesus to make you new. And right now, if you're tired of fighting with God and struggling through life alone, I want to invite you to cross the line of faith and to give your life to Jesus, who will make you new. And if you're ready to do that, I want you to pray this simple prayer. Jesus, I give you my life. Right now, just tell him, Jesus, I give you my life. You could even add, Jesus, take away the old and make me new. Just tell him, Jesus, take away the old and make me new. Because the new is coming. Father, I pray that in this room, that women and men discover who you are and trust you with their lives and open their hearts to you, Jesus. If you just prayed the prayer, Jesus, I give you my life, I want you to raise your hand right now. Just let me know right now. Just hold it up high. If today you're leaving the old behind and stepping into the new, just hold up your hand high and say, that's my choice today. Jesus, I give you my life. Beautiful. Father, I thank you for each person who opened up their life to you. I pray that you would fill them with your spirit and your presence. Let them know they belong to you, that you will never leave them or forsake them. May today be the beginning of the new. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's just thank God for all those who responded to him. So good. 2053. Man, I'll be 94. I'll still be hooping. I can feel it. Three-pointers dropping, breaking Joe Smith's legs, because he'll be 80. It's going to be amazing. Here's what I want to invite you guys to. We're asking everyone to join us in preparing for the future. We're asking you to make a sacrificial gift. Pastor Carlos, I think, came up with the idea of, let's do it around three. So threes look like this. You get $3, $30, $300, $3,000, $30,000. $300,000, and by the way, if you want to give millions, you can break the three, and I'm okay. You can give one, two, five, like, you don't have to stick with the three. You know, we don't have to be legalists about that. But here's what I want to encourage you to do. Even if you're in a difficult strait right now, and you're going, man, I just don't have the ability to give a lot, you can give $3. And the reason I want you to do this is I want you to be able to look back on your life and go, I began the next 30 years with them. We did it together. We establish the foundation of the next 30 years. This is not for you. This is not for me. In 30 years, I'll probably be somewhere else. But in 30 years, the future will be what you and I, what we together created. So let's all give together. Let's build this future. You can scan the QR code and give there. You can go to mosaic.org/give. Select Mosaic 30. You can give cash or checks in the give box in the back if you're still involved in organized crime, I guess, you know? And we're not questioning the legacy of the money, just the destiny, all right? And I want my wife, Kim, to come up. We just want to tell you guys we love you. Happy anniversary, guys. Mosaic, we love you so much.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Mosaic Podcast. As God has spoken into your life, one of the things that Jesus teaches us is that when we've been invested in, we need to also become investors. And I want to encourage you right now, if Mosaic is one of the platforms from which you grow spiritually, you connect more deeply to God, and your faith with Jesus becomes more real, I want to encourage you right now to go to mosaic.org and become one of our givers. Give a one-time gift, become a recurring giver, become a part of what God's doing across the world. Mosaic isn't just a church in Los Angeles. Mosaic is all of us working together.